Cap Figure Podcast. Susan Waldman is here, and amazingly, she's a woman who's good at radio. I don't know how you do it. You are amazing. So amazing, in fact, that many people, including myself, have suspicions that you may have used PEDs. How would you respond to that?
Okay, well, you know, if you want a hard-hitting interview about why did you take steroids and all that garbage, go to somebody else.
No, Susan, I like radio. I'm all for radio steroids. I'm just curious, how did you find out about them? How did you discover them?
Well, you know, Alex told me.
Alex who?
Alex Rodriguez.
Okay, your people are saying you have to go. Last question, what was your reaction to the World Baseball Classic? USA wins.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Of all the dramatic things I've ever seen...
Try to be best, cause you're only a man, and a man's got to learn to take it. Try to believe, though the going gets rough, that you got a hand tough to make it. History repeats itself, try and you succeed. Never doubt that you're the one, and you can have your dream. You're the best around, nothing's gonna ever keep you down. You're the best around.
Yeah, Susan. Boozin', losing. The god Susan Waldman, thank you. Tom, I don't know if you bumped into her in the hallway coming here, but Susan Waldman was here. Isn't that good stuff?
Yeah, it's awesome. These guests always seem to sneak out right before I get here.
Well, what are you saying?
I'm saying I'm intimidating them.
Oh, good. I like that. I thought you were going to say that they weren't really here or some ridiculous stuff like people on Twitter.
No, those people on Twitter,
those
right?
Those people on Twitter. I know I'm listening to like actual radio shows and just imitating them when they say people on Twitter.
Those people on Twitter.
So
well,
it's a Cap Figure Podcast, episode 43. That's Tom McLaughlin. Say your voice. Say your voice.
Hi.
And I'm Ryan DiPaolo. You know, what baseball... this is like radio, and I'm very not speaking articulately proper today. I deliberately butchered that sentence. Who are some baseball players who wore the number 43, Tom?
So the most infamous for 21 years, he wore 43, Dennis Eckersley.
Mm-hmm.
Also the leader in war while wearing number 43.
Why is he infamous?
Well, he's the all-time GOAT wearing the number 43.
So, but I don't know if that's infamy.
Maybe not infamy.
Don't back down from your hot takes. Just tell me, like, he killed somebody or something. Don't back down.
Okie dokie.
Come on, we gotta corner the market on lies.
Okay.
And who else?
And Curt Schilling wore it in the beginning of his career. And then, other than that, Jeff Nelson, Raul Mondesi, and a bunch of other schmoes.
All right, so... The World Baseball Classic. It just finished last night as of taping. The USA wins. I don't remember what predictions we made last time.
Oh, I do.
I'm pretty sure I had Israel winning it all. Look, I didn't do well. No, what did we say?
I projected the US to win from the beginning.
Mr. Chalk. That's why they call you Tom the Chalk McLaughlin.
Correct.
How does it feel? You only had to lay 2-1, basically.
It feels really good. Actually, it was a storybook ending to... I got into it with this kid on Twitter named Puerto Rican Johnny, and he... I put up a poll before the WBC started, and it was, who will win the WBC? U.S., Dominican Republic...
Japan.
Japan, other.
Ha!
And so he was super offended by the other... You know,
because
I put other PR, but you can only put 4 selections. So I just, you know, other
yeah.
Puerto Rico. And
those
I went,
are the top 3 favorites besides that.
I went by the Vegas odds. And so.
Who was 4th? Do you remember? Was it Puerto Rico? I don't even remember.
I think they were 4th, yeah. And
but
then,
they were. It was a big jump off after the first two and then even after Japan. And so what did Puerto Rican Johnny say?
So,
I'm sure it was a high level intelligent discussion. And I'm sure he didn't type in all caps.
He wrote back USA LOL and then did the, you know, the emoji with like the crying.
I hate it when ghetto people do that all the time. It's so stupid.
LOLZ
like
crying.
You're laughing so hard that you're crying. It's like, ah!
And then I responded to him and I said, you know, they're the co-favorite. I just went by the Vegas odds. And the So then nothing was said for about 4 days. The first game that the U.S. ended up losing, he then went back to this thread. Like, 4 days, nothing said. Goes back to the thread and goes, well, what about those odds now?
Who did the USA lose to in the first loss that they had?
It was the Dominican Republic game I was at.
Oh, right.
You know, and like Puerto Rico.
Just to rub it in, that's awesome. You're at the game. There's a big comeback. You're dealing with all these Dominican fans, as you talked about 2 episodes ago. And then to top it all off, Puerto Rican Johnny on Twitter rubs it in and says, how about those math now? How about that sabermetrics now?
And, yeah, so I
this extra juice is, I think, what you're getting at is that the sweetness of the USA's victory over Puerto Rico in the final last night, 8-0, after an undefeated Puerto Rican team lost to Marcus Stroman, who we hate. That all the sweetness, knowing Puerto Rican Johnny, that's how about those odds, all right?
Well, he said, I sent him back last night before the game was even over. I just did USA flag, the baseball USA flag emoji, dot, 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 and then like 7 of the crying faces, and he goes like, well, yeah, Stroman's just on his game, but it looks like Puerto Rico isn't even trying. You know, they're not even trying in
that's
the,
funny
is the his, finals
is his
yeah.
avatar and egg. That's really funny. I like that's my go-to in when you're in elementary school or whatever, when you would beat a kid and they'd be like, I wasn't even trying, I never said that, but that's a good one. It's just a way to be like, yeah, they didn't even care. They very much care. They were practicing together for months before.
Molina was crying.
Yeah. So, and by the way, I don't think he's a junkie anymore. Yadier, he lost weight randomly and he had the sunken in junkie cheeks. Maybe he's on methadone now or something. I don't know if you could be crinkling that paper on air, Tom. Tom is like an old woman in the movie theater thinking she's sneakily opening this bag of chips like nobody can hear it. But she'll do it more slowly, as if that'll make less noise than if you just do it fast.
Just go for the
gold. Just go for it, like all sneaky, like at the worst time in the theater. So anyway, that was fun, man. Like we talked about last time. We don't need to be too redundant, but I was surprised with the care I had for the WBC. It was really fun to get to root for, like, oh, Hosmer, who I don't like, is on my team now. Goldschmidt is on my team,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, did you have a similar fan experience? What would you say, like, impressed you or not?
Yeah, definitely. I thought this whole tournament was really intriguing. I watched this both semifinal games start to finish. I watched the finals, and then I watched any other sort of crucial games start to finish, and it was an amazing tournament. I had the same experience where, you know, sometimes there are players you know that are really great, but they're just on a rival team.
You don't have any emotional attachment to them or anything.
So, like, Adam Jones, this was awesome.
Right,
so
right.
Now I can go back to disliking him.
Right. But yeah, obviously. And you're referencing him playing clutch and made that great catch. Who was that against?
He caught it against Manny Machado.
Oh, right. In the second pool. And Dominican Republic, they didn't even make it. They didn't make it to the Final Four. That's an upset, right? They were favorites to win the tournament.
Yep.
But Puerto Rico, like, their pitching did really well with Seth Lugo. Who else were their pitchers? I don't even remember. The Orlando Arcia, some guy who's just like a AAA pitcher who never did that much. But obviously their lineup was great. You know.
Well, was it? I mean, I was talking with someone about this last night. They have the three big guns, obviously, Baez, Lindor, and Correa. But other than that, this is why I think Puerto Rico was maybe the fourth or fifth favorite, because you see those three guys, and then obviously you have Molina, who's the best catcher. You know how important the defensive catcher position is to me, but other than that, this team was not that good.
Yeah,
they would have been a 75-win team.
I guess you're right. They played well. Yeah, and how many games do you think if the USA team was in? You could pretend, though, there's doubles of every player. Like pretend that when this Team USA goes to play the Blue Jays, there's a Marcus Stroman on both teams, like as if it's a video game. How many games in the regular season would this USA team win? Because they had the best lineup of any major league team, but maybe the Mets have a better rotation, starting rotation, maybe. We can include Chris Archer, but I guess we'll also have to...
I would say they would probably win 100 games.
Yeah, I would say like the they would be as good as the Cubs, maybe.
Yeah, I mean the lineup was ridiculous, and it was almost so good that certain players you just couldn't get any value out of them. Like Daniel Murphy was on the bench.
Yeah, I know
the whole
that's
time.
Crazy. And Paul Goldschmidt, right? Didn't
yeah.
play.
Buster
every game.
Posey didn't play last
yeah,
night.
Yeah, it's crazy. Jonathan Lucroy, who I didn't really ever get to watch. I didn't realize how what a good catcher he is.
Yeah,
right. He made
great.
A lot of blocks. So anyway, we're going along with this. But the other thing that we should talk about, which was interesting to me, is the different cultures of watching baseball that you brought up, and we talked about a little bit your experience at the game, seeing Dominican fans bugging out and having fun, and then also even the Japanese fans, like
yeah, they had the band with
right,
trumpets,
right, and so it led to the it leads to the question. Well, I guess you brought up the question: does like our old school culture or what baseball is to us hurt like the growth of it? Right? Is that how you phrased it?
Yeah, I guess it would just be the marketability or the state of the game, and I think it does.
And what does that entail, though? Like define when you say the old school mentality. What do you like? What?
Yeah. So I think the best. Sort of the moment I can always point to is when there was that playoff game for the Blue Jays a couple years ago. Jose Bautista had a walk-off home run,
the bat
biggest
flip game
of his career.
Right,
did a bat flip, and then there it was very polarizing. Right, half of the people are like, "Yeah, that's awesome," and then half of the sports writers are like, "Oh, this is like a disgrace to the game. Act like you've been there before."
Right,
and I think they're. When I'm saying old school traditions, I think it's that old school mindset of like, don't do anything flashy. You know, don't put yourself out there.
You think that mentality, I didn't even think of the players on the field, but I guess they're one and the same. And how about the fans? Do you think that like would translate that? Like if you're okay more with your players showing emotion, that the fans are more likely to, bug out? Because then you look at Japan and like their fans are nuts. It seems, you know, we don't know because I don't watch a lot of regular, I don't watch Nippon regular season games or whatever. Right. In Japan, I just see them at the World Baseball Classic and they're going nuts though, more than the USA fans.
Well, what I'll say is that you can tell with certain franchises, the Yankees, for example, I mean, I think it's one part of it, but the whole hair and facial hair policy, you know, the Yankees want a very certain type of player.
Wait, and their policy is you can't have facial hair or long hair if you're on the Yankees, a player on the Yankees.
Right. And, you know, even thinking back, I mean, I could be very wrong here, but the most controversial Yankees player that wasn't a superstar I can remember was like Nick Swisher. So there's none of those guys that are like super flashy.
When Jabba Chamberlain came up in 2008, you reminded me with your Jose Bautista bat flip. There was controversy about him doing like just he was so amped up and he'd get a strikeout and cheer. And that was even like, oh, should he do that or not? And I would agree. I don't know necessarily. I don't know enough about the other baseball cultures to say that it's a that it's hurting the game, but I do know that I would agree that if we let the players like cheer a little more, or if that mentality wasn't there, then that would help the game. Absolutely. Same with football, that like Gadel Castro wants to make them not dunk the ball over the goalpost and Chad Johnson, you know, getting fined and Terrell Owens for doing these giant celebrations. It's like, you're in the business of entertainment, relax, but maybe they have to appeal to the racists or something. We're like, I don't want my TO celebrating too much. Blah, 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 blah. But, like, go ahead. I don't know what I was going to say.
No, all I'm getting at is there's a starking contrast between I went to, I'd say, 5 or 6 Yankees games last year. A couple of them were high-profile games. The first one I went to was Sunday Night Baseball versus the Red Sox. It was Tanaka versus David Price. So it was basically the biggest game of the season thus far. And with 2 strikes and 2 outs and runners on base,
nobody cared.
The stadium was silent.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And look, I've went to Met games as well, and the fans there are much more engaged. But then, you know, you go to the WBC and you watch on TV, and the fans actually are engaged in what's going on. And I think it's a problem for the Yankees, well, is what I'm going
to
say.
The Yankees, I'd agree that makes it less fun to want to go to games. As far as selling tickets, like, there absolutely is. At first, when you're bringing this up, I'm like, oh, that doesn't really matter. But there is a developing culture of being a fan of a team that includes, like, your identity as an Eagles fan is, like, we physically abuse opposing fans coming to the stadium. And it's horrible. It's stupid, but they take pride in that. It, like, gives you an identity as a fan. Or the Raiders with their outfits and stuff, right?
Yep.
Or as a Jets fan, being, like, a drunk Guido. Like, I used to, like that. I used to be like, yeah, me and my dad have Jets season tickets, and we're trashy Italians in a little bit, way, like, when we go. And so there is, like, a culture of fandom. And, yeah, like, over the years, with the Jets at least, is what I've had a similar experience that, like, the fans have gotten more and more tame, that I'm like, what? This is not as fun of a thing to be a part of when the fans aren't all in. It's like any concert atmosphere or something, right? Like you go to a festival, like I went to Mysteryland, and the atmosphere of the people makes the show that much better. Whereas if everyone's uptight and all uncomfortable, it makes it crappy. So, yeah, I mean, I do think, and you're saying that it would follow that the culture might get crazier if you let the fans' culture, I mean, the player culture change, like the.
Yeah, I just think that they should let them.
How do we change it?
Do whatever you want. I mean, you know, I think that, some of these old school sports writers who are the ones who seem to be the people so against these things, I think it would help for people to actually call them out, because who actually doesn't want that? Like, you know,
I understand. Everybody loved the bat flip. Like,
I hate Jose Bautista, so maybe I may have said something that, like, I didn't like that, but it's good for everything, right? Getting people to share that online with other people.
Right.
That's how people will fall in love with the game.
I remember Bryce Harper said that stuff like that, that, like,
exactly,
we need to encourage this. And thank God. I mean, he's as big of a profile guy as he could be. You know, Bryce Harper and Mike Trout are going to me now, as we're having this conversation, feel a lot like Martin Luther King and Malcolm X to me. And Mike Trout is going to be like the Martin Luther King, like, no, we got to turn the other cheek and include the old guys. And Bryce is with his hair and crazy, random, sporadic, amazing performances, like, nah, yo, screw the old baseball writers, man. We need the Nation of Islam. We need to band together, right?
Yep.
So.
Exactly.
Yep. You summed it up perfectly, Ryan. It's exactly like racial, like this.
It's exactly like Islam.
Like I was going to say the Civil War movement, the fucking, what's it called? Civil rights. So anyway. So the other thing, the last thing interesting from the baseball classic culture-wise was that I think it's really cool, a reminder to me at least, that Japan as a team, right, they only had one major league baseball player on their team.
And Narichka Aoki is not even a great player.
Right. He's a fringe, like, he might lose his starting spot, maybe, I think, right?
Yeah.
Like, he could lose it. And yet they finished, I think, third or fourth. I don't know if they play a consolation game, but either way, they're in the third best team in it and could have won easily. They only lost by a run to the U.S., right?
Yep.
And that shows, that reminds me how epic the culture in Japan is of baseball, right? Like, that's impressive. And it's so cool that there's, like, it's not all just overlap. Like, it's not that this is a big plus for the World Baseball Classic to continue, that this entire country with its own separate baseball culture that only overlaps by one player can do that well, right?
Yeah, well, the starting pitcher from Japan, I'm pretty sure, is going to be an MLB pitcher.
Who, which? Oh, the
starter. I forget his name.
Who played against the U.S. in the...
Yeah,
he's 27,
and his delivery
and he's awesome.
Is almost exactly like Tanaka. But yeah, no, that's definitely interesting. And one thing that Matt Vasgersian brought up during the game, which really was kind of eye-opening, is in the U.S. we have this mindset of protecting pitchers at all costs. And apparently the Japanese pitchers, even on their off days, will throw bullpen sessions of 200 pitches.
Yeah, I was reading about that pitcher. I didn't know that, but that fits in. So one, I learned about this with Tanaka, who had all this ligament damage, and everyone was like, have surgery, have Tommy John. And he's like, no, you're not cutting me open.
Yeah.
And he hasn't had the surgery, and he had a great season last year again, right?
Phenomenal.
He just went through it like the Adam Wainwright style, right? Who's the only really American player who didn't have the surgery and recovered from it, I think. And then I was reading about this pitcher who, I'm sorry we forget his name, but he had the same thing. They said he could throw like 98 when he came up, had ligament damage, was throwing 96, and just like realized after the season, like he just played a whole season,
had no idea.
And then it just kept pitching through it because it can repair with rest. You don't need surgery necessarily. And that encapsulates the why it's exciting to see Japan do well, because it's like, oh, there's this whole other set of ideas. It's like a whole new angle to the sport, and it's really exciting and interesting. Also, their gloves all looked really small to me. I don't know if you noticed that. Like in the field, their gloves look little. Maybe they have little hands. I don't know.
That could be it.
They should have like a team from the Philippines of all pygmies next time, just to have like a bunch of 5 foot players come from. Well, I guess that was almost the Netherlands, right? Like you said, they had all the shortstops who are like 5 foot five.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, that's it. So it's funny. I mean, I do not want to go too crazy giving credit to the other fans, because who knows, if they had 81 games a season to go to, they might not be bugging out. You know, their nationalistic pride might not always be there. You know, they can get up easier for a once every 3 years thing. And there were people in the crowd dressed like George Washington. And stuff,
yeah,
so.
George Washington
and Captain America.
The pitcher's name we're talking about from Japan, Tomoyuki Sugano.
Mm.
He'll be in the MLB next year.
And then there's the major star in Japan who's coming here soon. They think is a two-way player. He's the best pitcher and hitter in all of the Nippon League.
Yeah, he throws 100 miles an hour and he led in home runs.
It's crazy. I forget which they talked about him on Baseball Prospectus. I believe they were talking about him stopping pitching and just becoming a position player.
Well, that's an interesting discussion. So his name is Shohei Ohtani.
Oh, right. Yeah.
If you were his agent, what would you say to him to do? I would say that position players, and if he can hit really well, I would say his career has a longer lifespan. But
he could even get paid more as a position player, I think, right?
Yeah.
As his agent, that's what I would want to do more. But I would say if I were him, well, why not do both? Could he go to an NL team and do both? Do you think an NL team would do it? You think they would, like...
Some team is going to let him do it.
Like pitch every day. I mean, pitch once every 5 days and play in the field.
Maybe not. See, that's why I think he's probably better suited for an AL team, because he can pitch and then they could put him at DH, say, 1 or 2 days. I think it's a lot to ask to be a starting pitcher as well as playing the field.
Well, so then, but if you're in the NL, you get, no, it, that doesn't, I mean, I understand what you're saying, but being in the NL, the days he starts, he can hit also, and you don't lose
that.
That's
true.
And then maybe say you only play him 1 or 2 other days, but you're right, the difference is, if you can't get your rest in as a starter while playing days in the field, and he plays outfield, so that might be too hard on your arm. It's not currently. He's fine now, right?
But he's also, what, 20-something?
Right. Who knows? That's the key difference. So you're right. If you can't get in enough rest and play the field a couple days in between, then he would go to an AL team, would make sense. Or just make him a straight-up position player, like you're saying. It sucks to waste somebody that could throw 100, you know? Like, what would you do? Like, if you're a GM, like, what would you have this like ideal thing you can mold any way you want? Where would you put him?
Yeah,
it's sort of like the discussion we talk about, where like the fantasy of having like, say, you know that you're going to get this many innings from your pitchers for this season, and you know this many are quality innings, and you just could push a button and magically distribute them. Like, all right, I want 3 Noah Syndergaard innings here, and then hope we get the lead, and then I'll use some, you know, Seth Lugo innings. Like you could just distribute it any way you want. This is almost like that. It's like you have a blank canvas of a great player, and you can put him wherever you want. What would you do?
I guess if I were a GM, I would be more inclined to have him try to be a starting pitcher, and then if he fails, you know he can still hit.
Why do you say that?
Just because of the overall shortage of starting pitchers in the league. And, you know, like, he's not a great defensive player, so yes, he's a great hitter. I'm sure he could put up pretty good numbers, but what is the thing that he is great at that is rarest in the league? Or there's the, you know, overall lack of supply in the league, and that's pitching, throwing 100 miles an hour as a starting pitcher.
Right.
So if I were a GM and I signed him, my inclination would be to try to get him to be a starting pitcher. And if that doesn't work out, you could put him left field and then maybe even have him close on occasion. Come out of the bullpen.
I was thinking if he's that good of a hitter and you want to have him in the bullpen, there's no way to get him to hit in the AL, right? Or you could if you double switch, like, and you switch out the DH.
Yeah, you could just have him, say, play left field and then bring him in as a closer.
You know, what you can't do that I looked up with Madison Bumgarner, I was thinking about is, and I didn't know this, I just found this out recently, is that say you wanted him on the day he's starting, you didn't want to have a DH and you wanted a designated shortstop. Like, say you wanted just like, you know, Didi Gregorius or somebody even crazier, like Nick Ahmed, who actually the Yankees might sign, right? Who's a great fielder and bad hitter. Say Ohtani, that's his name, right? Ohtani, yeah, is going to start that day. You sacrifice the DH and instead of having the pitcher just pitch, have your shortstop just play the field and then let the pitcher hit. I would have thought you could do that, but you're not allowed to. You either have the DH or you sacrifice it. You can't move it to like be another player besides the pitcher.
That would make the game really interesting because then I think his value to an AL team would be even better.
Yeah, yeah,
if
yeah.
If he could pitch, then you could just
have replace a shortstop in the lineup or
the
something.
The fastest and best fielder in the world,
right,
who can't hit the ball at
right,
all.
Right, right. And what position? You think it would be a shortstop mostly or a catcher?
Probably it's either a shortstop, catcher, or center fielder. One of those three.
What would you guess it would be the most frequent? Like, on most teams, who do you think is their best fielder to worst hitter ratio?
I would say that usually that's catcher, right?
Yeah,
there's
at
only
least
five
right now,
good hitting catchers
right,
in the league.
In this year's snapshot, and that's the other thing we'll talk about for the last, like, 5 minutes, but is actually fantasy baseball that leads me to, do you think catcher today is, like, the tight end of the NFL fantasy football? Like, I mean, where it's like, do you think, what position can you get the biggest positional advantage at in fantasy baseball this year, do you think?
Yeah, I would say there's a huge drop-off between, let's look at the top catchers, Buster Posey, Gary Sanchez, Luke Roy, and then we go down the list a little bit, we have, like, Evan Gattis, JT Realmuto. There's just a huge gap. So if I'm looking at this and we're in a 14-team league, for example, Matt Wieters, I'm not comfortable with.
Like, you don't like having him as your catcher?
Would not like that. And so I think that there's a huge drop-off at
catcher. Is he the 14th-ranked catcher?
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
And who are some above him? Wellington Castillo.
Wellington Castillo, Brian McCann, Russell Martin, Salvador Perez. And then, you know, the other position that kind of sticks out to me is third base is so deep that, I mean, maybe I'm giving something away here. The only one worthwhile to me, there's two of them taking sort of the top of the draft would be Chris Bryant.
And you have the third pick. Would you take Nolan Arenado or Chris Bryant with the third pick?
I would consider taking Chris Bryant or Manny Machado because Chris Bryant can also play the outfield.
I didn't even think of Manny Machado. I think of he's below those other two guys for me.
But he also is categorized as a shortstop too.
Oh, wow. Oh,
so to
okay.
me,
never
that,
mind.
That's the game changer, right? Like, Nolan Arenado is a great player, probably will put up better numbers than, let's say, Manny Machado
yeah,
or Bryant.
I think he will.
But being able to put him in the other position is sort of a game changer.
And Bryant has that too, like the outfield spot.
And outfield is, I think, the position this year that is there's going to be sort of a shortage of. Because you look at the list and, you know, there's a couple of top guys.
Who are they?
Trout, Mookie Betts, Bryce Harper. But then the next group down, there's a lot of question marks. You know, Trey Turner, Charlie Blackmon, Starling Marte.
Yeah, I was
George
shocked.
Springer.
They had Charlie Blackmon, who's had good seasons, and he has steals, and he's good in roto leagues especially. But he, yeah, they had him listed in, like, the top 30 overall players, and I guess it's just because of his steals and stuff. But even in a points league, I mean, yeah, that's a thin field.
Like, the difference between the top players at outfield and then the next tier down, I think is there's a huge gap there also.
So catcher and outfield, you'd say?
Catcher and outfield. Second base, there's been that trend in the game that second basemen have, they're just better hitters, and
yeah,
that's because of the shift.
Dude, actually, and you know what else? I have this Baseball America book in front of me, the handbook, and I meant to ask you last week. They list what you look for, like the order of ranking of tools per position around the diamond, and I meant to quiz you on like each position. Like, what would you guess is the number one tool of like power, hitting, fielding, speed, etc. for like center field, for example? What do you think would be the number one?
Center field, I think, would be speed, fielding, in one of those orders.
The first is fielding, then actually it's hitting, then speed, power, arm strength. Left and right field, what's the top?
Arm strength is higher for the corner outfielders, I'm sure. So what were they again? It's speed, hitting, power.
Yeah, in any order, there's hitting, arm strength, fielding, hitting, power, speed.
So I would say for the corner outfielders, it's probably power, mm-hmm. hitting, arm strength,
then speed and fielding,
speed,
or fielding, speed.
Fielding, and then
wait, in which order? You just almost nailed it. Power, hitting, arm strength,
fielding, speed.
Yeah, that's exactly right field, and left field just has it swapped. They have fielding third over arm strength.
Right.
Why because is the, that? Right the, field, you have to throw further?
Yeah, so let's say that there's a player at the plate and he hits it into the right field corner. You know, that throw to throw out that runner at third base is much farther than if that ball is in the left field corner.
Right, right, right. And you're never throwing out a player at first, so it's like obviously, right, right.
Yeah.
How about first base? What would you guess? The top one. Just do the top tool.
First base, power.
Yeah. How about second base? This one is surprised me. I probably gave it away, but.
So that's interesting. Yeah. Second base, fielding?
It's hitting, then fielding.
Okay.
I would have thought it would be fielding, hitting, and but power that's third, speed and arm strength. But it's funny because, you know, shortstop obviously is fielding, arm strength, then hitting, speed, power. And third base is power. I thought third base might be hitting overall. Not one position except second is just your hit tool the most important, like in this.
I see.
So that's funny to me that I guess it's like the direction of the game, or it just is what it is, that you get a high for average player with a good hit tool. But there are a lot of second basemen.
Yeah, and that's... we've definitely mentioned this before. You look at the year when Cano left the Yankees to go to Seattle. The reason that he was so great with the Yankees was there was Dustin Pedroia at second base with Cano, and then there was such a huge drop-off.
That's stupid. That's not the reason he was so great, Tom.
Well, no, but...
In fantasy?
Yeah, well, in fantasy, and he was just, those two are so much better than everyone else at the position, mm-hmm. and now you have Jose Altuve, you have Brian Dozier, Daniel Murphy, Rougned Odor, D. Gordon, Matt Carpenter plays second, Kinsler's there, DJ LeMahieu,
wow.
Javier Baez, Dustin Pedroia, Ben Zobrist, Jason Kipnis, number 16th ranked
second baseman.
So the second base is a deep position.
Dude, I'm not drafting a second baseman.
Me
neither.
If you
can wait and get Kipnis that late and stuff.
16th. And then even, you know, Jonathan Scope and Devin Travis are not bad either.
I know.
Logan Forsythe.
Yeah, I know. I mean, in fantasy, it's like, he's not great, but he's still like, you're not screwed. I mean, that's really interesting. And
so hold off on drafting a second baseman.
Yeah, that's what I'm taking away, unless I can get, I mean, I don't even know. Daniel Murphy, I think, is legitimate now. I might take him earlier than I would, but besides that, or D. Gordon in a roto league because he steals like nobody. You know, there's very few guys with that many steals.
Yeah.
I bet you he'll still go in the first two rounds in leagues.
D. Gordon. Well,
in rotisserie leagues. Like
Altuve is going to be a high pick.
Altuve, yeah, he's going to be the first one taken, no?
Out of second baseman, yeah, definitely. But I think that's a bad pick to make.
Yeah.
Is the point we're getting at.
Yeah. So you wouldn't take Altuve in the first round, the end of the first round?
No.
Yeah, because you could just wait and get Daniel Murphy.
Exactly.
But it's so different in a points league versus a rotisserie league because Altuve is a guy who steals.
Right.
But he doesn't steal that. Our league is going to be net, what is it called? Net steals. So it takes away your failed attempts. He doesn't have a good ratio of steals. He steals a lot, but he tries a lot.
Yeah, so
D. Gordon is even more valuable compared to him than he would be otherwise in our league.
And then, you know, another position, shortstop.
Well, it used to be 2 years ago, shortstop was brutal, and now it's better. Now it's a lot better. And it's funny, somebody like Troy Tulowitzki is like the 13th ranked shortstop last year. That's insane.
Yeah, he's 14th on this list. You know, the top, they have Manny Machado as a shortstop.
You've
got Carlos Correa, number two. Mm-hmm. Corey Seager is three. And here's an interesting one, and this is because of the versatility, but I think he's ranked too high, is Jonathan Villar from the Milwaukee Brewers is the fourth-ranked shortstop.
Because of steals, I think.
And then you have Francisco Lindor, Xander Bogaerts, Trevor Story, Gene Segura, Eduardo Nunez, Addison Russell, Baez, and then Aledmys Diaz, Troy Tulowitzki.
Jesus, isn't that what is this a list of? Projections or
rankings?
Yeah, it's
just projected shortstops.
What site are you on?
Ours, Fantrax.
Isn't that insane that Tulo's fallen off that much?
It's incredible.
It's so amazing. It's worse than anybody could have thought, even looking at his home road splits.
So I think the other thing is starting pitching is super valuable. I mean, if Clayton Kershaw falls to me, I've got to consider taking him.
Third overall?
Yeah, because he really is in another sort of stratosphere. And
Our league is 14 categories head-to-head weekly in hitting and fielding. So most of them, they're more counting stats than average stats. So, I mean, yeah, that makes starters even more valuable than they would be starters or innings eaters even, right? Because it's like pitches thrown, I think, is one of the stats, like just number of pitches.
Oh, wow.
You know, Clayton Kershaw, but I feel like I would want, well, I guess let's go through the positions. Catcher, you're screwed, right? Like, I mean, would you take any catcher, though, in the first three picks? I feel like catcher is like a spot, like late first round, early second. I might take, you know, Gary Sanchez. No, that's way too early. I don't even know why I'm saying that. I'm just going to punt catcher, man.
I might, too, because there's so many question marks even around the top guys.
Yeah, I was just thinking that. I'm like, oh, yeah, I'll definitely take Buster. But it's like, I don't even want Buster Posey that badly. I don't want Gary Sanchez that bad. Like, I would take Gary Sanchez in the third round in a 14-team league.
Agreed.
And I think that's probably about where he may be going, maybe a little earlier. First base, there's not as many as there used to be in years past. What's the list of first base look like?
Yeah, first baseman's a little bit shallow, but
relative. Who's the top one? Joey
Paul
Votto?
Goldschmidt.
Oh, yeah.
Then you have Anthony Rizzo.
Oh, yeah.
Miguel Cabrera, Joey Votto, Encarnacion. Freddie Freeman at number six, I think.
He had
is,
a great season last year, yeah.
He's someone who's going to be on my list. But then it gets kind of shaky.
I'd rather have him than Miguel Cabrera, just because I'm afraid of Miguel Cabrera breaking down eventually, even though he's still amazing.
Then it gets kind of shaky, right? You've got Will Myers.
What number are we up to with Will Myers?
Eight.
Okay.
Jose Abreu, Matt Carpenter, Chris Davis, Hanley Ramirez, Eric Hosmer.
Hosmer's gonna get picked higher because the World Baseball Classic, somebody's gonna reach for him after seeing him do well.
The top five guys are top six are I think very solid.
I'm
and then after
Greg
that
Bird.
Yeah, Greg Bird's not even on this list
of all the dramatic things I've ever seen.
He's number 21.
Who's like the lowest on the list?
I mean, how low do you want to go?
32.
All right, let's see.
I'm going to take Who did I have last year? I took Carlos Correa and Giancarlo Stanton. I forever hate Giancarlo Stanton, Mike Stanton.
So Joe Mauer's 31.
Joe Mauer. Dude, he used to be good. I wish he was catcher eligible. You know, it was funny last season, Evan Gattis, I picked up knowing that they were going to start putting him at catcher, but he was only eligible for DH at the time, and I was falling behind in the standings, so I had to let him go before he got the catcher eligibility, and then a week later he got it, and then he was like, ended up like the fifth-ranked catcher in baseball with his eligibility. So what are you going to do?
What are you going to do?
So that's it. What's your general strategy before we're done, like, for the draft?
Yeah, so...
I'm going to buy low, sell high, Tom.
No, I mean, it's going to be the same thing I always do with other fantasy drafts. I look for players that I think are undervalued because they don't play for a big market team or they don't necessarily get the attention.
Well, let me just say that you think that really would affect a 14-team league with, like, prospects and stuff? I think it might be too knowledgeable of a league to find a deficiency there.
Well, I mean,
Website's rankings, and if we use that as a guideline, then that may be the place where you can make it up.
Right. That's the other thing I always do is I look at the ranking system from the website of whatever league I'm in, and then I look at a consolidated list of the other websites' rankings, and then any players that are, like, noticeably off from where they're ranked on our site, I just highlight them. And if they're supposed to be higher than they are in this projection list, then I try and draft them. And if it's the opposite, I just try and avoid them.
So this is coming from how many years in a row have you made the playoffs in our fantasy football league?
I think every year. So what,
so five years. You have sole possession of first place in our NCAA pool. You finished second out of like 200 or what? How many people in your mom's pool last year? You're a fantasy game god, so much so that my dad, he was like, Kathy McLaughlin is Tom, because in the bracket pool I'm running, Tom is using his mom's name to sign up. So my dad sees this Kathy McLaughlin winning, and he didn't know it was Tom. And he's like, Kathy McLaughlin's Tom? Oh, my God, he's too smart. You got to kick him out of everything. He's like, yeah. It's not fair.
No, it was funny because my stepmom has done, like, the March Madness pool for – since she started working at Discovery Channel, which was like almost 30 years ago, and she was so bad, like so bad. I don't even think she understands the seeding, but last year we had the exact finals game in our bracket. So everyone was coming up to her at work and they're like, did you study for this? Or like, what's going on here?
Didn't she win like $4,000 from her? Or you guys won?
Yeah, we won a decent amount, but not as much if...
they didn't hit that shot.
Yeah, that would have been huge because it was like a $200 entry.
Vanilla
and like
Nova. I know, man. A
couple hundred people.
Who's going to win the tournament? Not that it's, you know, we're done with the episode. Who's winning March Madness, bro?
I got to say, at this point, I think Kansas is the best team.
Just so people know, today is the day that the Sweet 16 is beginning. So
right. I would say Kansas is the best team. And
Mason takes too many shots. He's whack.
But the thing with Kansas is they are consistent enough not to have that one terrible game. Whereas
that makes sense. Yeah, they have like, enough. Like if one of their good players has a bad game, they can still overcome it. Like he did last game against Michigan State.
They have Josh Jackson, who's going to be a top three pick. And so, you know, I have UCLA winning in one bracket. I have UNC winning in the other. But if there's anything I saw in the last games, UNC almost lost to maybe the 50th best team in the country.
In Arkansas.
And then UCLA, they won that game by a lot, and they got hot in the second half. But the first half was really ugly. They almost
Drake
lost
play
that
bad?
Game. Yeah, Drake played bad. Lonzo Ball. Yeah. His dad is a character, too.
Do you think... Yeah, well, who is his dad? Why is everybody talking about his dad?
His dad is... Well, he has three sons. They're all going to play for UCLA. They're probably all going to at least make an NBA team. But
is his dad only famous because he's his dad?
Correct.
Oh, I didn't know. I thought his dad was like a ex-player or something.
He played in college like a half a season at a Division I school and averaged 2 points a game. But he's sort of manipulated the media. He's just become a huge troll.
Why? What has he said? Like,
he said that he can beat Michael Jordan one on one.
Oh, I like that.
And then he basically called out LeBron James. He said that LeBron James kids will never be great at basketball because they'll always be compared to their dad, which is, I mean, that's a fair point, but it's... Well,
that's the stupidest thing you could... That's so obvious.
But he is trolling, and a lot of people are knocking him. He said, you know, I want a $1 billion shoe deal for all of my kids, and that sounds like a ridiculous number, but... Hey, I mean, if he gets picked in New York or L.A., Lonzo Ball, and then that team starts winning, maybe it's not so ridiculous. I mean, the shoe company's still going to make money.
You know what? It's so smart. This guy, I love him already, because even though what he's saying is stupid, apparently, I know who this player's dad is. I don't know who any other player's dad is. He's making himself famous by trolling. This is why Warren Sapp got in the Hall of Fame, I used to think, just by being a troll. Like, he's a Hall of Famer. He's good enough. But I used to not think so, and I had this theory, and it is true to some extent, that he super was able to raise his profile by being such an outspoken guy, which is so valuable. You know what I mean? Like, it's like people know who you are. That's the reason he has at least 3 commercials still today.
Yeah, he's and it's smart. It really is smart.
Well, you should try it, dude. You're never a dick.
Yeah.
You're Tom Chalk McLaughlin. Try it.
Okay.
I live like this, you know? I say inflammatory stuff left and right.
Okay.
And I'm as happy as can be. All right, so that's
look at me with my Spurs hat.
Yeah, look at me.
And my Anaheim Rangers Mighty Ducks shirt.
I literally have an Anaheim Ducks shirt on and a San Antonio Spurs hat on.
Okay.
And a Jets hoodie, actually, I was wearing with it before.
So you're doing well for yourself.
Hey, don't judge a man by his cover.
Okay.
Or book, something like that. Bye, guys. Thank you.